Well, thank you very much, Barry, and I'm very pleased to be here today. I was elected as a trustee in the Cowichan School District in November 2002. And the Community Alliance for Public Education was formed really out of that election. And it was formed from both the experience of the election and some of the promises that I held people to when they asked me to run. I was approached actually by the IWA, who represent custodians, bus drivers, and maintenance workers. And I agreed to run on two main conditions. One is that I would run as an open labor candidate. The second is that I would expect that the work I did at the board would be supported by active organizing in the community to defend the public education system in the Valley. And really what flows from that is that I would not be there to rubber stamp ministry cutbacks, that we would fight to adopt a needs budget in our school district with community support. And in taking this on, we found through our work that we have had to continuously rethink and recast the conventional ways in which people take on and think about the challenges facing our public education system. And I guess I want to share with you today the ways in which we've been forced to rethink and recast the approaches to political action and community organizing, in terms of both what we are up against, questions of vision, question of what should our strategic response be to the challenges that have been thrust upon us, as well as what the roles of political representatives, of unions, of parents, and communities as a whole should be in that process. Now, in terms of our challenge, and we've heard a lot about this at this conference, and people who were at a conference last year, hosted by the same folks, would talk a lot about the challenges facing public education coming from this government. And I think the conventional view uses a medical analogy. Essentially, that cutbacks, you have a doctor who has the patient on the table and performs an operation. And from the right wing's point of view, this can be a very sanitized, essentially, affair in which we pull out what we don't need and throw them away. For those who do not see the sanitary nature of that process, have still focused on looking at cutbacks, looking at it in that medical way as some kind of ghastly medical experiment. Now, I don't think that is not without truth. However, I think it is an inadequate analogy. This is more than just about cutbacks. This is more than just about meanness, and certainly more than mismanagement. These things are there, but it goes much beyond that. Instead, we have to view this as a concerted siege of our public institutions that's part of a global trend to subordinate every sphere of both human and natural life to the grasp of a US-dominated free market. And the analogy that I've really taken to heart is to think of the liberals as a US copycat occupying power. They've occupied government in order to liberate the taxpayer from their public services. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? You go into a country, you destroy it, and you cast it as liberation. And that is what is happening here in this province. Although they don't use tanks, they don't use cruise missiles and missiles. Instead, they rewrite contracts, they slash budgets, and they push boards to enter into free market experiments on their communities. And we have to understand that their bottom line, which they talk about being a fiscal one, their real bottom line is an end game. They have a plan, and they have the confidence to follow through on that plan based on the success of occupier governments elsewhere. And we cannot forget that no matter how incompetent and stupid they may seem at various times, we should never fail to note that despite stupidity and incompetence, they can still carry out their agenda. They do not need popular support in order to win. If we do not have the stomach and the effectiveness to fight and to turn back this siege. Now, Now, I want to talk a little bit about vision, because it's amazing how such a phenomenally bankrupt agenda has such a clear vision. In fact, it has really very much the feel, the look of a divine mission. That they are essentially, it's a free market crusade for an infinitely more prosperous future. And we hear this coming out again and again, and you wonder, how can really such a bunch of business enthusiasts who like looking at spreadsheets and so forth, how can they have such an inspired divine vision? Well, because, as I said, they have the confidence of experience elsewhere, that a morally bankrupt agenda has been successful in so many countries in carrying out what are these morally bankrupt aims. And that's what gives them their sense that they're on the winning team and they can carry this through, knowing that it's been done elsewhere. And it's unfortunate that the clear vision of these free market fundamentalists is not faced by a coherent vision in opposition. That what we have on the one hand is a half acceptance of the free market analogies. The idea that, well, yes, we want public services, but they have to be affordable. And a growing acceptance of the fact that commercial motives will inevitably play a role in shaping public services. Another impulse that's found in the opposing efforts to this free market siege is a nostalgia, an idealization of the public services of the past. I think that if we accept the free market confines that public services are being thrown into, and just hope that we can develop a more humane approach in enacting that process, we are simply just playing out their end game to their advantage. There is no advantage for popular communities, for the labor movement, for anyone who wants a decent society, to play the game the way that they want us to. It's also important to note that it may be tempting to look at the time of Trudeau, the Just Society, to see that that is relatively better than compared to now and be nostalgic about that. However, we should really be very honest with ourselves and put forward the fact that public services have never been truly universal nor genuinely democratic. That we have not had, public services have always suffered from an inadequacy of both quality and accessibility, and have been controlled by a management regime that is hostile to the interests of labor and other popular communities. So we have tried to think about, well, what could we contribute in the way of a vision? A vision in opposition to this free market fundamentalism that has a grip of the entire planet. And our contribution is, in a more general way, that really working people deserve public services that are responsive to their diverse community needs and have a democratic system of decision making that has real meaning in the everyday lives, working lives and community lives of ordinary people. And the idea that we've been putting forward is that as a goal for public services is the idea of enshrinement. That we should look to have public service guarantees enshrined in the highest laws of this land, in the Constitution, to combat the business privileges they entrench in treaties like NAFTA and the free market agenda of occupier governments, with an effort to actually insert into the democratic laws of this country to say, working people, people all through this country deserve and should expect certain levels of quality of service and accessibility. And I think by raising that kind of clear vision, we provide a long-term rallying cry and organizing focus to build the kind of social services that people deserve. That it's in the process of trying to achieve that aim that we will not only be able to have some clear focus in fighting what's going on, but we can also say that there is indeed an alternative to the cynical agenda of downsizing and privatization. And I think that really that comes to the question of strategic response, because in the end, a vision only takes shape in its effective realization. That's what they're doing. That's why their vision is so clear, because it's been done elsewhere and they're carrying it out now. And I would say they're carrying it out with, you know, a minimum amount of fuss in the end. There has not been, I would, in my opinion, a tremendous amount of resistance to what has been going on in this province. That against, they have this strategic blueprint, they borrowed from the United States, they tried it out first in Ontario and Alberta, they import those people into the ministries here, and they use the formulas that we've come to recognize to separate the means from the delivery, which of course means you can use proxies like boards to carry out your dirty work for you. And of course, what happens? Well, the people in those communities will get mad at the boards, not at the government. It's a very good con, and it has worked very well. They also, of course, can use this to carry out a policy of divide and conquer, to pit communities against each other through school closures, to encourage parents to attack school staff, to say, those people who are providing the service for your children, they're the ones to blame for this crisis. And that, too, has been successful, I think, to a fair degree. And I believe it's unfortunate that there is such a prevalent view that resistance at the local level cannot be successful in turning back this siege coming from this government. And although I think there's a limit to what one can achieve on the local level alone, I do believe that if we want to prepare the basis for future broader victories, we have to have successful local resistance. It simply can't drop out of the sky. And that view that we can't do anything locally until something bigger happens is counseled in action, waiting for one of two things to happen: a change of government or some kind of launching of a general strike at the province-wide level. And the way that plays out in the public education system is that essentially communities are there to urge boards to manage this crisis as humanely as possible. In other words, to accept that this is an inevitable process, but we really wish we'd like to be included in deciding what kind of cuts are carried out. Well, once again, I think that this is playing the end game by their rules. And then, in fact, worse than that, we're providing a shield of legitimacy for this ministry agenda. And we're promoting the myths, too, that some cuts, we can carry out some cuts, we can bring in some private ventures, and it really won't harm our public system. We often hear this idea that we carry out cutbacks, and I hear it in my own district. They say, well, we've tried to keep the cuts as far away from the children as possible, as far away from the classroom. The idea that we can get rid of non-essentials, like bus drivers, like janitors, like secretarial support. And of course, not only does that essentially throw away the fact that, or reject the fact that we have, our school systems are dynamic and diverse, and that if you don't have buses there to pick up the kids, the dislocation that causes for parents, the disruption in our communities, if we don't have clean schools, just the general feeling of misery and sickness and the way that can impact on education in the classroom, not to mention you have a leak in the roof of your classroom and what that can do in terms of the quality of education that's being delivered. Of course, we also know it's a lie. They have slashed directly in the educational field, and we've heard this at this conference, and really I think the labor movement has been very clear in putting forward that we've seen schools closed, we've seen libraries essentially driven almost to extinction, become more like museums than libraries, in fact, learning assistance, class size. So in fact, in the end, it's just a cover. It's a cover to attack the system as a whole, all its essential parts, both in the classroom and outside of the classroom. Well, we have taken a different approach. We have sought to convince our communities that we need to stand together to be active in pressuring our board to adopt a needs budget. And that the community must be active in pushing for their demands and expectations regardless of the government in power. That there is no savior waiting to come in and fix things from us from above. We have to be active to make sure that our demands and expectations are going to be met. Because we certainly know that other people who do not share our interests are always active in pushing for their agenda. And it doesn't seem to matter who gets in government, but they always seem to get into the front of the line in terms of who gets what in terms of the public treasury. Now, in terms of how we've gone about trying to build this active community involvement in support of a needs budget. Where we started was in building parent and staff teams at the school level, in documenting both the extent and impact of cutbacks on the needs of our schools. And it wasn't simply the exercise alone of coming up with this documented research and information that is important. It's the community dialogue that it fosters, and people becoming aware of what's going on, that it's not just happening to them, it's happening to everyone in a particular school, that what's happening to their school is being, you know, in slightly different patterns and permutations being faced by other schools elsewhere. And by coming to understand that and recognize the connections between each other, we also then begin to consider how we can come together to face these challenges. Because in the end, we have to know what we're up against so we can actually stop it. It is simply not enough to simply catalog the crimes and the suffering and then say, well, let's hope that someone can get us out of it. So what we've tried to do, what we plan to do in the next phase of our activity is to go from documenting the impact of cutbacks at the school and the district level to feed into a concerted community and education campaign to build the moral case for a needs budget and to develop the kind of resolute action necessary in order to impress upon this board that they are going to have to listen to all the communities in terms of what our expectations are, in terms of the kind of public education that our children deserve.